Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Today on The Grave Talks, we continue our conversation about a home for the haunted, the Pythian Castle, with Melissa Thurow. So you've been there for 8 years, and you were kind of drawn to it yourself. What's it been like for you to work there? Do you feel like there's other presences there with you sometimes?
You know, in the beginning, I always, you know, we get a lot of folks that come on tours and things that are very much skeptical. They're skeptics. And, you know, I get it. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it takes one thing to turn a skeptic into a believer. So I always like to kind of joke that I know how these, you know, things sound to some people. When I first started there, when I would be alone, like in the daytime or whatever, I always almost felt like I was being tested a little bit. Like, do I have good intentions for being here? Am I going to go about, you know, spewing a bunch of fake stories about the building? Am I going to try to do anything bad for the building? It was almost like they were trying to see if I was a good fit to be there.
Oh, that's interesting.
Just because of the way it felt going in there. Every time I went in there, I always had this feeling something was watching me, something would follow me through the building. And I don't necessarily mean like this foreboding, awful feeling. I just felt like someone was watching almost like, you know, a teacher or a boss would watch you, like making sure I was doing what I was supposed to do. And that feeling eventually kind of went away. And maybe that was just me getting used to the building. But now I can walk in and I can almost immediately tell how the night's going to be. If it's going to be a quiet night or if things are going to get a little interesting. And I am not a medium. I am not a psychic. I do not possess any of those gifts. But I can tell you the minute I walk in a room, if there's something odd about it, the energy in the building will tell you if something's in there. And I know that that sounds weird, you know.
It doesn't sound weird actually at all.
It just, you can just tell. Or I'll be standing in a room and then all of a sudden the energy shifts and I know I'm not quote unquote alone in that mm-hmm. room anymore. That is still something that happens today. Last night I went in for a tour and I could just, it was almost like there is like an electricity in the air. There's like a current. It just felt very busy. And sure enough, when my guests started coming in last night, they were all very fun loving, happy, kind of boisterous type of people. So that kind of gave me a tip off that I'm either going to have rowdy folks or I'm going to have a bunch of really fun people. And they turned out to be a lot of really fun people. And we had a good time, but that energy changes depending on where I'm at in the building. So usually in the main floor and upstairs, if I get this feeling that an energy shift, you know, happened, it's usually a positive type of thing. But the basement is very different. The basement is where I get more of the foreboding, heavy type of shifts that I don't really like. The basement has always made me uncomfortable and it still makes me uncomfortable.
And that's kind of consistent to the basement.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm that way with any basement though.
You know, there's lot of haunted basements.
You know, even today at my parents' house, I book it up the steps just like I did when I was a kid. There's just something about basements. But yeah, the basement at the castle, even during the day, it's a very different feeling than anywhere else in that building.
Well, and when you think about it too, you know, different things happened in the basement that went on in other places. You know, maybe there's something that happened down there that was kind of dark. And
I mean, they're so, unfortunately for us, we have not been able to get any of the death certificates from the military's time there. We've reached out to them to see if they would be willing to give us any declassified documents, any kind of, you know, death certificates or things like that. So we can continue doing research and see, you know, well, how many soldiers might have passed away, you know, either at O'Reilly General Hospital or on the castle grounds. And we have not been lucky with them. But with the Pythians, we have 83 death certificates of Knights of Pythias members that did pass away in the building. We know that there are right around 100 that died in the building, but we have about 83 of their death records. They were all elderly, except for two children that we have death records of from the Pythian era. And those were a pair of sisters, and they both died at 14 years of age. One of them died from strep, which today, you know, is something you can cure pretty easily. Mm-hmm. But she died from strep, and then her sister died from tuberculosis.
Oh.
And how they did not have a tuberculosis outbreak in that building is beyond me.
Right.
But they both passed away. They're buried with the Pythians. We think those are the giggles we hear. A lot of times on tours, we will hear what sounds like a couple little girls giggling and laughing with one another. And we think it's the sisters that do that. But as far as kind of talking about the dark things that happened in the basement, there was a gentleman during the Pythian years. His name was William Resenbrink. And he actually took his own life in the basement of the building. He did it in a manner that some people question if he actually did it himself. or if it was someone else. Oh. But he slit his own throat with a straight razor.
Oh, I was not expecting that.
That the room that we believe that happened in, it was originally the bathroom for the Pythian men. So they kind of had an odd layout during the Pythian years. The children who lived there and the handful of married couples that might have been there, they all got to sleep on the main floor and the upper floor. But most of the Pythian men who were there, they were single. So their rooms were in the basement. They had a main like dormitory type of situation. And their bathroom was also down there. And that's the room that this gentleman slit his own throat in. And that is one of the spaces that if I'm going to lose somebody on the tour because they're uncomfortable, that's the room I lose them in. That's the room that they will ask to go back upstairs or to leave. Or some people get faint. Some people say they don't feel good. That's the room that it happens in.
And that's interesting because you've done a lot of tours. So you've seen that repeatedly, I'm going to guess.
Yeah. I had a lady 2 weeks ago that said she had to leave.
It's too much.
And it doesn't happen super frequently, but it seems like when it does happen, it happens kind of like in clusters. Like I'll have 2 or 3 weeks where every tour I do, somebody has to leave or someone says they feel lightheaded. And then I'll go a couple months and that doesn't happen. And then it starts up again. So it's like a cycle.
That's interesting.
And then right off of that is where that steam tunnel is that I mentioned runs to that back building. And that's where the spirit I had my first interaction with is. We call him Mr. Boots. But he has an odd way of making people uncomfortable. People like to describe him as getting a little too close for comfort. So like when you're in a crowd of people somewhere, or you're at a concert, and you have that one person that's just standing a little too close, and every time you kind of try to like wiggle away from them, they just get closer to you. That's kind of what he will do to some people. People feel like somebody's hovering over them and they'll try to move a little bit and that hovering just continues. That's one of the things that he will do to make people uncomfortable. But he'll walk up and down the tunnel. It sounds like very heavy boots going back and forth. He is probably the spirit that if I can avoid him, I will. He scared a group of, I had a private group one night because you can rent the castle out if you want to do a private investigation. So I had about 10 people and I went down the tunnel with them. As bad as it sounds, he doesn't come out if there's a bunch of lights on. So a lot of people have their ghost hunting devices and they have all the lights and the gadgets. And I tell them, I said, if you want him to come out, you got to turn it off. So they'll turn it off and we'll just sit there, you know, in a long, dark tunnel with no lights on, which is not fun to begin with. It's awful.
You are so brave, Melissa.
No, I'm really not. But I put on a brave face for the guests. I hate every second of it.
Oh, my God. I don't think I could.
I do. The tunnel's about 240 feet long, so it's quite a stretch, and it's single file, so you have to go single file. You know, it's always funny when I talk about it on tours, because I always have that one or two guests that are like, ooh, I want to go first, me. And I'm kind of like, okay, cool, you can go first. And one of two things always happens when we actually get down to it. Number one, they see it and they start looking at the people that are directly behind them and they'll say, would you like to go first? Please, you can go first. I don't want to go first anymore. So that's one scenario. And then the other scenario is they'll call my bluff and they will go in first. But when it's time for them to come out, they're the last one out of the tunnel. So they're in the rear. And usually that person that's in the rear always gets that feeling that somebody is coming up behind them. So usually that person starts yelling for everybody in front of them to go faster. I'll tell them to hurry up, move, get out of the tunnel because they feel like something's coming up behind them. So I always try to warn people at the beginning of the tour, be sure if you want to be first because you'll be last.
True. Yeah.
But we'll, I had a group of about 10 people down there, and we were at the very end of the tunnel, and we had all the lights off, and we were just looking at the entrance, which the entrance to the tunnel, you can, there's a little bit of light that comes through. And I always like to tell folks, when you're down in the dark for a long period of time, your eyes can kind of play tricks on you to where it looks like something's moving, but usually it's, there's nothing there. So we were sitting there looking, and it was almost like this head was kind of popping out from the corner, looking down the tunnel, and then it would step back like we couldn't see it anymore. And that happened a couple times. And one of the folks, she was asking me, she's like, is somebody else here? And I said, no, it's just us. We're all, you know, everybody was accounted for in the tunnel along with myself. I said, it's just us down here. And she said, well, who's at the end of the tunnel? And I said, well, you know, I said, I don't know. So I hollered. I said, who's down there? I said, you know, just let me know you're here. Nobody said anything. So then a couple minutes later, a full form dark shadow steps into the entrance of the tunnel. And everybody behind me got really quiet. And I was sitting there because I was the last one in, which meant I was closer to the entrance than anybody else. So everybody behind me got real quiet. And I was sitting there and I was like, oh, please don't be who I think you are. Even though I know these folks paid for the experience, they want this. Well, I thought they wanted it to happen. But I'm sitting there. I was like, oh, no. Okay. I've got these 10 people down here in the dark and I can already tell they're uncomfortable. So I'm sitting there and there's this big metal plate that runs right in front of the entrance to the tunnel. And you have to step on it to go down. You have to take two steps to get in. And I heard the metal clank of the plate. So I hollered again. I was like, who is down there? Don't get an answer. And now I realize that the shadow thing is moving towards us in the tunnel. And I was like, oh, okay. Because now I can hear the people behind me getting restless and I know that they're uncomfortable. And the footsteps start, which is something he does. We started to hear the boots and they started getting closer to us. If I didn't have 10 people down there with me, I would have had a panic attack because I was not a happy camper in that moment. And
no.
And I know some people just look at me when I tell the story and they're like, then why do you work there? I'm like, because I love the building. That doesn't mean I don't ever get scared though. Because I'm basically at the end of a long dark tunnel with 10 people I don't know, and I have something that I can't see moving towards us.
And you're kind of responsible for them.
Yes, right? I mean, these people did want this, right? They wanted the experience.
They're getting it.
Yeah. So finally someone behind me turned on their flashlight because I knew they were uncomfortable. Someone turned on a flashlight and went down the tunnel with it. There's nothing there. There's nobody there. And I was like, okay. I was like, we're good. I was like, you know, let's start making our way back to the entrance. And of course, there's one guy. He's like, no, turn the light off. Let's see if it's still there. And I was like, okay.
Of course you went
there. There's always one, right? Everybody else is uncomfortable except for this one guy. The other person with the flashlight turned it off. 5-10 seconds later, the footsteps start up again and you can kind of make out movement. And I was so uneasy at this point in time. And there was a lady that behind me that was like, turn on that flashlight again. And, I think the one guy that asked for it realized that whatever was in the tunnel was not messing around because he got real quiet after that. And we turned on the flashlight again. There was nothing there. And I finally said to everybody, I said, I think it's time to go. And they all agreed with me. Even the brave guy, they all agreed with me. We made it out of the tunnel. And I don't think they went back down there by themselves after that experience. I think they ventured to other parts. But that was probably the most unnerving thing because really, could we have made it out? Of course we could have. But that unknown of what's there, what could that thing do? or not do. You just, you right. don't know. You never know. So.
And it's obviously trying to frighten you. You know?
Yes, I think sometimes it is. I think sometimes when people outstay their welcome, at least for that spirit, they don't want us down there anymore. So he is going to, I say he, I'm assuming it's a he, but it's going to do something to intimidate people to try to leave. Now, some people don't leave. They'll just stick it out. And while I don't think we have anything bad, demonic, things like that there, I also want to have enough respect for something there that's like, we need to go. Okay, mm-hmm. then we're going to go and right. we'll let you have your face back. Because you just never know. You never know what these things could or could not do. And I'm not the type of person who's going to poke the bear enough to find out.
And it was kind of like, that's how it took it. You were poking the bear. And then you turn on the flashlight and everybody's like, okay. And then that one guy's like, got to poke the bear just one more time.
Yes. And it's so funny because I usually know, I can usually point out who it's going to be. Usually at the just beginning of the night, group. I'm like, oh, there's the person. That's the one that's going to be the troublemaker. And you know, I completely understand. People want to have an experience. Some people have never had something like that happen and they want it to happen. But it's when that actually does happen that some people realize, maybe I don't want to mess with this, or maybe this is more than I thought it was going to be. And I think those are the type of people who actually kind of gain a respect for the paranormal and the unknown. And they don't just treat it as, you know, a mockery. They don't just, you know, make it into some silly thing. I think those are the people that actually kind of learn, yeah, there is something to it. And maybe we should be a little bit more respectful mm-hmm. of those types of things. Because that does go a long way. I don't think people realize that the spirits that we have are either going to be military individuals, they're going to be children, or they're going to be elderly people.
Right.
Of a secret, you know, society type of organization. Those are who our spirits are. And I think when people realize that's who you're trying to communicate with, I think that they start to show a little bit more respect and start asking the right questions. And I think that's when they start getting the communication that they're wanting.
And I do think it's all in your approach on how you approach the spirits there or any place. Because, you know, I think if you go with an antagonistic approach, I don't think you're always going to want what you get back, you know?
Yes.
And
yeah, I mean, there, you know, some people could say, well, if you don't antagonize them, they're not going to do anything. You know, maybe for some places, but I feel like most places, if you go in and you're polite with your questions and you're respectful with what you're trying to, your intentions, I think that's going to get you more interaction and activity than going in and just kind of being a menace.
Yeah.
Because I've agreed. Even had people on tours come in and I'll hear them in the steam tunnel cursing, cussing, trying to get a rise out of things. And I'm just kind of like, guys, that's not the way to do it. And again, that's just my opinion. I just don't ever think that's a smart thing to do with the unknown.
I am 100% with you on that. And I think most people agree with that.
Yeah, I just tend to err on the side of caution because it is unknown. And yeah. I don't want to upset something so bad that I could potentially get hurt or, you know, anything like that. So,
have you had some investigative groups come in and have you been surprised by some of the things that they discovered or evidence they might have captured?
A couple things. I tell you what, YouTube apparently is the way to go nowadays for a lot of investigative groups. Mm-hmm. And I'm not dogging them at all. They found an outlet and it works for them. And I think that's great. One of the things I really found interesting is the part of the basement where the military used to have the bowling alley. That's all been cleared out now. There's not a bowling alley down there anymore. But there was a root cellar down there during the Pythian years, and it's an area that we have seen what looks like children, like child-sized shadow people kind of running around and little footsteps and things like that. And there is one YouTube group that came in that kind of started, well, didn't start this investigative technique, but kind of kicked it off at the castle, was they started playing a game using the flashlights. So, you know, you can take a flashlight and just barely have it connected, and you can ask the spirit, you know, yes or no questions to turn it on or off and things like that. Well, this group decided if there were children down there, they thought maybe they'd want to play a game on turning the flashlight on and off, and they'd get points for it. And for whatever reason, that resonated with one of the spirits there. And it started answering questions by turning that flashlight on and off for them. And they were getting answers to questions that made sense. So some of these YouTube groups that come in actually do the legwork, and they do the historical, you know, look into and deep dive, and they know kind of what they're interacting with. And some of the answers that they were getting were answers that matched up with our records of things that happened or with people that we knew were there. And I really thought that was interesting that they were getting these intelligent type of answers just alone from a flashlight, and they made sense. At least they made sense to those people that knew the history. So other YouTube groups have caught on to this, and they've been going down there and kind of doing the same thing in the same room, and they continue to get these answers that make sense. And I just kind of found that was really interesting. I was like, such a simple tool,
mm-hmm.
but they're getting intelligent responses from it. And so now anytime a group comes to investigate, I try to tell them, you know, this works for a lot of people down here. You might want to try it and just see what kind of, you know, interactions you get. If we're following one another on social media, a lot of times they will get into touch with me and say, yeah, that really worked. You know, here are the answers that were the questions that we asked, and these are the answers that we got back in return. And I'm kind of impressed by some of the things that they got.
And that to me makes sense to do that, because it's not antagonizing anything. It's just asking them some simple questions of interest to the spirit they're talking to.
Yes. And that, you know, I really appreciate the groups that do that. Because they're number one, I feel like they're trying to almost build a rapport with, you know, whatever spirit they're trying to interact with by asking them things that they might actually know, instead of, you know, an offhand question about, you know, well, who's the president right now? Well, right. I mean, maybe they know that, maybe they don't. But if they try to interact with them asking questions about, you know, maybe simple questions, did you live here? Are you a boy or a girl? Just simple, just to start a conversation, I think that bodes well for them. And I really respect those investigators that try to do that. There was, I won't say the name of them, but a bigger group that came through. And when I first heard they were coming, I was like, oh, I was skeptical. Even though I had not watched any of their things, I was just skeptical because of who they were. And I watched the episode, and I was blown away by how absolutely respectful and great that they were to our spirits. And that made me really happy to see that they were great. But they also did the flashlight thing in another portion of that room. Only this time, they were asking more questions maybe towards an adult, and they also got intelligent answers. So that leads me to believe that there are two entities down there that find the flashlight easy to interact with. So that really kind of piqued my interest with the flashlight thing.
Do you find there's activity throughout the entire castle?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that there's any. Everybody wants to know what's the hot spot. I don't really know that there's a quote unquote hot spot. I feel like each room has their thing that may or may not happen. I feel like some rooms may have more, like the theater that's upstairs. there's several different things that can happen, but that it doesn't always happen. And that's one thing people who are new to investigating, I kind of feel like I have to give them a little forewarning that you see these shows, you know, and the YouTubes and all the things where all this stuff happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to try to tell them, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's not the reality. You can come here and do an investigation and there may be one small thing that happens and that's it. And that's just how it goes. You could come back 2 months later, be the same group of people, and it may be the best night of activity that you've ever seen before.
Right. Right.
But you know, it's not like I can't walk into a room and be like, hey, Bob, it's your turn, you know, flicker some lights, shut a door for me. You know, that's just not how it works. They're going to do things if or when they want to do them. And I think some people, I have to give them that reality check. And it's not always a fun thing to do, but, you know, that's just how it is sometimes. But, you know, the theater upstairs, there's a lot of different things with shadow people. We've heard what sounds like music coming out there, almost like a piano being played. Mm. And then whistling is something that happens throughout the entire building. We will hear short whistles. We'll hear a tune being whistled. And there's little things everywhere. It's just, you just need to kind of pay attention.
And the piano playing in the theater makes sense because I was reading that they showed silent films there.
They did.
So they would have had piano accompanying that.
Because when the castle was built, the theater was built as well. And it was a way that the Pythians could earn a little bit of money. So the public could come and see those black and white silent films. They would pay, I think it was a nickel for them to come in. And they would watch that. And then all that money that they collected, they would go back into the care center for the Knights of Pythias and the children. And when they weren't having the movies up there, they had their church services in that room. So to be a knight, they did want you to believe in something bigger than yourself. It didn't have to necessarily be one religion or another, but you had to believe in a higher calling. So once a week, once a month, they would bring in a different church leader, whether that was a pastor or a priest or whomever, and they would say those services. The piano makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
The theater up there, since there were church services that were held, that is also where all the funerals were presided over. So for all the Knights of Pythias that died in the building, their funeral was presided over in the theater. The music, the singing or the humming that some people hear, that all kind of goes together with what we know went on in that room originally.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, do you do the ghost tours and the public investigations on a regular basis?
So the ghost tours are weekly.
Okay.
We do them all year round.
Oh, I've got to come for one sometime.
Huh?
I've got to come to one sometime because we're not that far away.
Yeah. You let me know when you're here and I will try to be on the schedule for you. Yeah, ghost tours are year round. History tours are year round. The investigations, so you can book it privately. I believe it's on Tuesdays and Fridays. Or if you really need a Saturday, a lot of times we can work with you if we don't have another event. And you can do, basically, you come in with your friends or whomever, and you can investigate the castle basically by yourself for 2 hours or 6 hours, however many hours you would like to do. And then we also have it, we have like public investigations. So coming up here in a couple of weeks, we'll have, there's a group out of St. Louis that puts these events on for us. And we'll have 30 or 40 people that come. And we will teach you how to use the equipment. If you don't know how to use ghost hunting equipment and you want to learn, we'll teach you. And you kind of do a rotation type of thing through the floors so you can kind of learn what you're doing and your layout. And then we'll turn you loose and you can investigate it on your own till about 3 o'clock in the morning. And that was the tipping point that got me to work there, was I went with my friends to one of those overnights. And I had my first run-in with Mr. Boots in the tunnel. And that was kind of the thing that I was like, you scare me half to death, but I feel like I need to be here. And I emailed the owner and they said, sure, I need help. And, wow. And I'm still there.
I'm so they impressed.
They haven't run me off yet.
I'm impressed you went back.
There was just something intriguing. Even when I did that history tour years before, when I was thinking about the wedding, I just, there is just this weird draw to it. And I feel like it's cheesy to say that there is a calling for it, but I felt like there was this weird draw that I needed to be there.
I've heard that from so many people that they feel a strange, an unusual connection, an unexplainable connection to a location. I've heard that so many times, and they don't know why, but they just feel like, you know, some people have said, you know, they had no intention of buying a building and they were just kind of called to do it. And it's like, there's one guy I talked to one day. He's like, I was not planning on buying it. And then when I was there, it was this overwhelming, like, I have to own this place. And so I always find that so interesting when you have that draw, that connection to something. It's kind of bigger than you can explain.
Yeah. And, you know, my friends and I, we go around the country to different locations and do our ghost hunting girls trips is what we do. And there's one other location that we have been to. And as soon as I walk out that door, I get this call that I need to go back. And I don't know if I can say it or not.
Yes, you can.
Waverly Hills.
Oh, yes.
Louisville, Kentucky. Uh-huh. Every time we get in the car to leave, I have this overwhelming feeling I need to turn around and go right back.
Isn't that something?
And the castle is the only other place I've had that feeling. And I don't know why. I don't think I've ever had any relatives that were in there. I've been to multiple haunted locations around the country, and that is the only one besides the castle that I have this overwhelming feeling I need to be there. I need to go back. And I have no explanation for
it. And now you do every day.
Yeah.
You go back.
And funny enough, here in 2 weeks, my girlfriends and I are going to Waverly. So maybe I'll get that.
Awesome.
I'll get that feeling to go away, maybe, or it's just going to come right back.
I think it's going to come right back.
Probably. But, you know, it's funny because we have a lot of people that want to work at the castle and they want to give the tours. And, you know, some of them come in and they say the same thing, that they're drawn to it. And other people say, you know, I'm a medium and I'm a psychic. And, you know, I was told I need to be here. And so, you know, we will train them. We'll get them going. And I really feel like the castle will have who it wants there.
Mm-hmm.
And all those people that have said that don't last.
That's interesting. It's kind of like the castle's picking the staff.
Yes. So all of the guides, the newest guide that we have, I want to say has been there 4 or 5 years. That's the newest that has stuck around. The oldest, I say oldest, the guide that's been there longest, she's been there 10 years. I've been there 8. Another guide's been there 8. And then the new, quote unquote, newest has been there 4 or 5. Anybody else that has started they just don't last for whatever reason. I'm not saying that it's a paranormal thing, but for whatever reason, they're not around anymore.
Kind of the castle pushes them out. Maybe.
You know, I really feel like it chooses who it wants to be there.
And that.
I don't have any other explanation, because these other people, they gave wonderful tours. They were very nice. They're not there.
But then if you go there and you get the feeling that you're not welcome there, or you get that kind of feeling like it just doesn't want you, then that would be really uncomfortable. So I could see why people would be like, I do not like the place.
And, you know, it feels different when the owner is gone. It's almost like the cat's away, so the mice will play. They almost are more active when the owner's gone. which is always very fun for us guides, especially the ones that have to stay the night, because it's like, oh boy,
here we go.
What are we going to get into this time around?
I am staying away from the tunnel. No yes. reason to go down there.
But you know, the funniest thing, he creeps me out anytime I'm there. But my 8-year-old daughter absolutely loves the steam tunnel. And she's been coming with me to the castle since she was a year old. And every time she goes with me, she has to go down and say hi to Mr. Boots.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Every single time. And he has never done a single thing to scare her when we've been down there. Now, I don't let her go in the tunnel by herself or anything like that, but I'll walk down there and we'll stand at the entrance to the tunnel and she waves and she says, hi, Mr. Boots. I wanted to come say hi to you.
I find that very sweet.
He's never done anything to scare her, startle her, nothing. But if I go down there by myself, that's a whole nother story.
Right.
So it's, you know, he is intelligent. I have had people ask him to, you know, tap on pipes and do things, and he'll do it. So I don't know if he's conscious or aware that there's a child down there and it's not just me, but anytime she's there with me, that room that usually really bothers me, it's almost like it's calm.
Well, and it would make sense that he would recognize a child energy, you know, because he probably, that is, I would think that's how they pick up on everybody's energy. And he likes her.
I mean, I would hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, she says that he's her friend. And she'll wave.
With that sweet little attitude, how can you not love her?
And, you know, I'm just kind of like, do you see anything down there? Because a lot of people claim that children can see things.
Yeah.
She's never really said yes or no. So I don't know if she's just doing that, just not giving me an answer because she already knows that she knows that her mother's afraid to go down to the steam tunnel. She knows mom's creeped out, right? And she thinks that's really funny because he doesn't scare her. And I'm like, well, okay, that's fine. I'm glad he doesn't scare you. But yeah, she'll go down there and she'll wave down the steam tunnel and she'll tell him hi. And
I just find nothing. That so sweet. So sweet.
So I'm trying to. He's in my good graces a little bit because he hasn't scared her. So
yeah.
That's fine.
You have to have respect for him because of that.
Yeah. But I just find that funny that he creeps the mom out. But my little girl, he's totally fine with. So
is the best way to get information through the website, thepythiancastle.com?
PythianCastle.com. Yes. There is a Facebook page. It is unfortunately not updated super frequently. So I would go to the website. You can also call. It is a little bit cheaper if you buy tickets to the tours through the website instead of just showing up at the gate. It is a little bit cheaper if you go through the website to do that.
And then you make sure you're on the tour.
Right. And a lot of times if there's not enough people booked for a tour, we won't have one. So it's always best to book online or to call just to make sure, because say you want to come in January and the weather's a little bit iffy, they may just call off the tour because of the weather. So it's I would always do your research, make sure there is in fact a tour going on, and of course, you know, booking through the website's the best way to do that. Usually the gate down at the end of the driveway, it always opens 30 minutes before a tour. And
I can't wait to come see it sometime.
It really is
it's
a beautiful
impressive.
Building. If you're not a believer in the paranormal, the history alone for a place like Springfield, Missouri, it's just so interesting. And there's so much of it. So, you know, to those people who are a little bit skeptical about paranormal stuff, I can tell you all the history you'd ever want to know. It's just a very interesting place.
In Springfield, that area is really pretty. It's just a really pretty area of the country, too.
I mean, I think so. I like the Midwest. I don't ever foresee myself moving away from here because I like the seasons. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's a pretty area. We have Bass Pro. So, you know, you can go to the Bass Pro.
That's true. That's true. You do. Well, Melissa, thank you so much for taking time out of your evening to have a chat about the Pythian Castle. It's so interesting.
Hey, I appreciate you reaching out and having me on this to discuss it. I love that building so much, and I will talk about it any chance I can get. She's beautiful.
And that wraps up our conversation about the Pythian Castle with Melissa Thoreau. For more information, visit their website at pythiancastle.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, then become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free. You could also sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.